From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Show me what democracy looks like.
This is what democracy looks like.
Off of the expressway to online, a war of tweets between Governor Rauner and Mayor Emanuel over the path of the anti-violence march. The demonstrators demanded all of the inbound lanes of a section of the Dan Ryan be shut down, not just the right lanes.
I think the governor and Illinois State Police, first they started out lying this morning.
The governor tweeted, "This is unacceptable. We had clear parameters that allowed the protesters to be heard while respecting law and order. Instead, they chose to cause chaos." In a follow-up tweet, Rauner expressed his disappointment in the mayor and called on him to do his job. Emanuel hit back, tweeting, "It was a peaceful protest. Delete your account."
It is my honor and privilege to announce that I will nominate Judge Brett Kavanaugh to the United States Supreme Court.
Today I'm here to talk about women such as myself who use assistive reproductive technology to have children. Women who perhaps struggled with infertility for years or decades. If Roe v. Wade were overturned, the protections provided by Roe v. Wade against things like personhood amendments would have disappeared, which means that my fertility doctors would have been committing a crime in helping me to try to start a family.
And that was U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth with her reaction after President Donald Trump announced his Supreme Court nominee earlier this week. Also, we heard tape from ABC Chicago. Governor Bruce Rauner took to Twitter to criticize Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel after a protest in the city. We'll talk about that and more this week on State Week. In Springfield, I'm Daisy Contreras. Sean Crawford is out today. We're joined in studio this week by Kent Redfield. He's a professor emeritus of political science at the University of Illinois Springfield. Well, Kent, thanks for being here with us again.
Good to be here.
And joining us from the State House Bureau in downtown Springfield is Illinois Public Radio reporter Brian Mackey and Dave Dahl, reporter for WTAX Radio. Dave, welcome back.
Thanks very much. Glad to be back.
Well,
Quite formal here, I see. I wasn't expecting this.
Well, Brian, we'll start with you today. After Justice Anthony Kennedy announced his retirement several weeks ago, speculations began to circulate on who would be President Trump's Supreme Court pick to replace Kennedy. Earlier this week, he announced Brett Kavanaugh as his choice. Who is he, and what were some of the reactions across Illinois?
Well, Brett Kavanaugh is a judge. He's been a federal appellate judge for more than a decade now. Before that, he was a Republican lawyer. He was in the Bush administration. He also popped up in a number of controversial instances in the late 90s. He was part of the Clinton investigations, working with Kenneth Starr, investigating the suicide of Vince Foster, as well as the Lewinsky scandal, things like that. It's to the point that when he was first going through the confirmation process back in, I think it was 2004, Dick Durbin compared him to Forrest Gump, in the sense of somebody who pops up in a lot of historical places because of his constant presence in a lot of controversial legal happenings in the late 90s and early 2000s. Since then, he's been somebody who's been talked about. I heard him referred to as a Supreme Court justice in waiting on the appellate court, writing a lot of very conservative judicial opinions for the past decade or so. And in terms of the reaction in Illinois, it's pretty much what you'd expect. Democrats say he's far right, worried about him. And if you're a Republican, you say he's brilliant and has impeccable legal credentials.
We also heard from gubernatorial candidates. We heard from Pritzker and we heard from Rauner. What did they have to say?
Well, Pritzker is certainly against the idea, and Governor Rauner is in support. What I think is interesting, Daisy, is that a lot of the Democrats are saying, we call on Governor Rauner to reject this nominee. It's really not up to the governor to do any rejecting or affirming. The only people who have votes are U.S. Senator Dick Durbin, U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth, both of whom are Democrats. And you heard what Senator Duckworth said at the top of the show. And certainly Senator Durbin is going to closely scrutinize Judge Kavanaugh.
And I thought it was interesting, Dave, you said, because it's interesting that Duckworth did the usual boilerplate about we'll review him and give him a thorough hearing. Dick Durbin didn't even really go with that sort of, you know, boilerplate kind of polite thing that you often say. And in fact, by the end of the week, he was sending an email to his campaign supporters, not his press list, but his campaign supporters, saying, sign this petition that we shouldn't even consider this nomination, just like Mitch McConnell, the Senate Republican leader, wouldn't consider Merrick Garland, who is the judge that President Obama nominated in the last year of his term and who never even got a hearing. Democrats, some Democrats, including Dick Durbin, apparently, are now suggesting that there ought to be a tit for tat. And because Merrick Garland wasn't considered for the court in the months leading up to an election in 2016, therefore, Judge Kavanaugh should not be considered in the months leading up to the election this year.
They can do all they want, you know, stand up to it, what have you. It's certainly going to get a hearing in the Republican-controlled Senate.
Yeah,
and you'll get some fodder from the Illinois elections as we go forward. This will play out in terms of not just liberal conservative, but on specific issues in terms of a threat, you know, a perceived threat to gay marriage or to Roe versus Wade. The reality is he's probably will be confirmed. And initially, you will probably have the court giving a lot more leeway to states that want to put restrictions on access to abortion, states that want to provide religious exceptions for people who object to doing services that would, you know, support, say, a gay marriage ceremony. It's unlikely that any of that kind of state conflict spills over into Illinois. We have two candidates for governor who are pro-choice. Pritzker particularly has been also strong on gay marriage. Illinois has never, you know, bills are introduced to do, you know, restrict abortion, limit access. They never go anywhere in the Illinois General Assembly. So if this becomes a battle at the state level, it's probably going to occur primarily outside of Illinois' border.
And in Illinois, we have House Bill 40, which Governor Rauner did sign, which basically would be allowing for taxpayer-funded abortions. And it also has a section in it that would kind of protect that, you know, in case Roe v. Wade is overturned, it wouldn't be the case here in Illinois.
Yeah, and when the Supreme Court essentially threw out the death penalty a couple of decades ago, when over at real administrative issues, they essentially said, now everybody has to start over from zero. And so while I think it's unlikely that you're going to overturn Roe, you would just get a chipping away at it that would probably completely eviscerate it in some states ultimately. But if you actually overturned Roe, normal, you know, what you would expect would happen is the court would essentially say everybody has to do a reset and affirmatively decide where they are on the issue.
Well, from federal to we move now to Chicago. Last weekend, a march in Chicago closed off a section of the Dan Ryan Expressway, which ignited some criticism from Governor Bruce Rauner aimed at Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel. He took to Twitter and said, I quote, I'm calling on the mayor to take swift action to put an end to that kind of chaos. Kent, this isn't the first time we've heard the word chaos attributed to Chicago's violence, right?
Well, it is an issue. It is a real issue, a substantive issue. The people that were doing, you know, involved with the protest are, you know, they'd like answers, resources. There's a lot of concern. Unfortunately, this plays out in terms of Rahm Emanuel is running for re-election in the spring. The conditions in Chicago in terms of violence are going to be a huge issue. He wants to align himself with that. The governor is looking to kind of reinforce his image with his base and to be law and order. And so, you know, you've got a real issue here that has many faceted that gets played out into politics with people trying to frame it in terms of things that help their particular issue, you know, getting elected mayor, getting elected governor.
And I would just add, I think it's important to distinguish that while the protest was about violence, against violence, it itself, the protest itself was not violent. It was peaceful by all accounts, and it was certainly disruptive. I'm glad that I was not trying to drive into Chicago on the Dan Ryan. But for people living in the areas of Chicago that are hardest hit by violence, this is literally a matter of life or death. And they wanted to make bold statement that would get the attention, and it certainly did that. And we should also add, I think, that the governor later went on and clarified when he used the word chaos. This is in a subsequent tweet. I guess the limitations of doing your messaging in 280 character increments. But he clarified that when he said chaos, he was referring to the traffic situation. But still, the perception damage was done, or perhaps the perception benefit, as Kent said. You know, he wants to appear to some voters to be Mr. Law and Order. To other voters, he wants to appear a little more progressive.
Well, the governor took yet another opportunity to stick it in the mayor's eye, and what I thought was interesting was, please correct me if I'm wrong, there weren't that many voices on the governor's side of it saying, yeah. I mean, you've got pretty much everyone in Chicago on board with what happened, and
the police chief himself was literally marching arm in arm with Father Flager, who's one of the leading voices of these protests.
Yeah, I thought it was a curious choice by the governor there.
Yeah, and I would also just say that it struck me, this is not my original thought, I saw a commentator say this, and I'm sorry, I don't remember who it was, but, you know, we often hear after mass shootings when there are protests, well, you know, you hear sometimes from some quarters, conservative commentators, well, why aren't people protesting the so-called black-on-black violence in the city? Well, this was exactly that. This was protesting the violence in the city. And so, you know, a lot of people did embrace it. The governor chose to take a somewhat different position.
All right. Moving on to campaign. The Pritzker campaign released an ad earlier this week about Rauner's connection to Correct Care Solutions, a company that provides health care and other services at correctional facilities and possibly some immigration detention facilities. The Rauner campaign asked the Pritzker campaign to take that ad. Dave, what's happening here? What seems to be the issue?
Well, the issue is that this company that at one time was part of the Rauner portfolio, Pritzker is arguing, is benefiting from the storage of kids in these, for lack of a better term, cages, you know, away from their parents. And the entire Pritzker ad has been pretty much debunked, not just by the Rauner people, but in an AP fact check. And so the message from J.B. Pritzker is that not only is Governor Rauner a multimillionaire, but he's a multimillionaire on the backs of these immigrant families who've been separated from their kids. It's not quite true, and that might be an understatement that I just said. Now, the governor, ironically enough, is saying, hey, you're lying about me. Take that ad down. Pritzker says, no way.
Yeah, and some of the specifics of the claims here are that there was an investment that the governor's former firm, he had retired apparently after this, one of the funds at his firm, which was a private equity firm, invested in this company that later took over this, you know, changed into a different company, and there's all these complicated business relationships. The Rauner administration says because that firm hasn't sold this investment, you can't tell whether it's actually a profit or loss, even though the overall investment fund itself was profiting. It gets pretty complicated in the business of it. But what's not complicated is that the Pritzker ad also quoted the governor saying, I haven't thought about that, as though he was talking about the families being separated from their children at the border, when in fact the governor, when he said, I haven't thought about that, was speaking specifically to this question of whether if the president had asked for Illinois National Guard troops to be sent to the border, whether the governor would do that or not. A number of other governors at the time were saying they would or would not. The governor basically dodged that question by saying he hadn't thought about it. But he did say during that same news conference, if I remember correctly, that he thought it was terrible to separate families from children at the border.
And what I think is so odd about this is it takes so darn long to explain it, even if it were true, where J.B. Pritzker has available several easy-to-remember messages in one breath. 14 people died at Quincy, and it's the governor's fault. The governor signed the abortion bill after lying to the cardinal. The governor lied about the school bill taking credit away from Andy Menar. I mean, there are so many ways that you could go, and this is his play?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's obviously an ad that fails at, you know, technically, strategically, it provides this ammunition for the other side. You know, it really is a failure. It's early in the campaign. No one will remember when we get to November. And I wish I could believe that this was, going to be the last, half-truth or outright falsehood that we're going to present to the public between now and Election Day. You've got two campaigns that have unlimited money. We certainly have seen from the Rauner campaign, they have no hesitation to label Jeannie Ives, the extremely conservative Republican who almost beat him in the primary, to label Jeannie Ives as Mike Madigan's favorite Republican. The Pritzker people are doing a, 6 degrees of separation kind of linkage to get somehow hook Rauner up with the children's separation crisis at the border. And so this does not bode well for the quality of public discourse that we're going to get between now and Election Day.
There you go, Professor, expecting things.
quality public discourse. That's what you can expect from Illinois government and politics.
And since we're on the topic of campaigns, Governor Rauner has been trying forever to link Mike Madigan to everyone that he's opposed to. Just this week, the governor and some other Republicans announced the People's Pledge, asking for term limits and to vote for anyone but Mike Madigan. This isn't new. Correct?
No, I mean, this is, I lose track of, the Republican Party in Illinois has done fire Madigan campaigns. Is this 4.0 or 5.0 or what version of that campaign we're on now?
Yeah, they did it before anyone even heard of Bruce Rauner.
Yeah, exactly. So, but the difference is that as Kent alluded to earlier, the governor has virtually unlimited money, and he has succeeded in driving down Mike Madigan's poll numbers to the point where, in a state that President Trump lost by, nearly 20 percentage points, I believe Mike Madigan is viewed more unfavorably than President Trump at this point. And so the Republicans think they have a winning issue. Unfortunately for J.B. Pritzker, some of his opponents in the primary, Daniel Biss and Chris Kennedy, were filmed saying that, Pritzker and Madigan are tight and, Pritzker is Madigan's favorite candidate, that sort of thing. And now the governor, his campaign is using those ads against J.B. Pritzker. So it's something that they're going to keep harping on. In terms of the actual substance of it, it's pretty ridiculous. It's also it's a departure. Typically, you would not see, and Kent, maybe you can speak to this better than I have. You've been watching Illinois government more than I have. But, there was a time not that long ago when the speaker was elected by acclamation. That means that he won 117-1. And people would just sort of, out of a show of bipartisan comedy at the beginning of session, would just we'll dispense with the actual roll call vote and just everybody, let's start off on a good foot at the beginning of this 2-year legislative term and we'll just all vote for Madigan as speaker. Those days are over.
I-T-Y,
yes.
Not E-D-Y.
Yeah, good yes. Distinction there.
Yeah, and this is clearly the combination of the crisis, the fiscal crisis that we have that has, 100 parents that have contributed to this, and then the very systematic campaign of the governor to demonize the speaker, to try and leverage that and the budget crisis to get his turnaround agenda. We basically wrecked the state government and social services and universities over that effort. That did not succeed. We have driven down the speaker's negatives. What this kind of website, sign a pledge sort of thing, This does not swing independent voters. This does provide email addresses, social network linkages that you can then send propaganda and fundraising information to. And so this, you know, these sorts of things, they make sense within a campaign, but they're not the sort of thing that is going to move a voter that's on the fence.
Especially before Labor Day. I mean, who out there in the 102 counties, you know, is really watching it like that?
Except us, you know, which is maybe a bad commentary on us.
The cool kids, yeah, but what about everybody else?
And speaking of state finances, early childhood education funding in the state, there hasn't been enough funding, and some districts are worried about their programs. Kent, what has been, you know, the issue here? Is this an indication that the state is still not out of the woods with its education finances, even when we have a budget in place?
Well, clearly, I mean. The specifics are that the state changed, you know, kind of opened up applications for districts to get early childhood education, made it a competitive program, and there wasn't enough money to fund all of the programs in existence and really all of the programs that met the qualifying level. And when this all rolled out, then we saw a story here in Central Illinois of, you know, a lot of school districts that have lost significant state funding from where they were a year ago in terms of support for early childhood education. And we've made such a big deal out of the last three budget cycles. We fund education. We got more money for early childhood education. But when we try to implement something that, you know, allocates money and tries to do it on a statewide basis, suddenly we're looking for $170 million to give everybody a piece of the pie. So it's a pretty clear indication of, you know, how fragile our state finances are, all of the tough choices that are going to have to be made by the new legislature and whoever is governor next year. So I think if you need any indication that we didn't solve all our problems by, you know, passing a budget this year or even enacting a tax increase to get us back to where we were 3 years ago, we've got a lot of hard choices and not a lot of people telling the public the truth that are running for office, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point, Kent, and I would just emphasize that just because we raised taxes, I mean, that was like throwing a Band-Aid on a gaping wound just to kind of get it done and finally pass a budget for the first time in 2 years. I think if you were starting with a sort of clean chalkboard and devising the appropriate revenue structure for the state of Illinois, you would not have simply taken the income tax and raised it by 1.2 percentage points. There are a lot of other more deep and nuanced things that people think need to be done, whether changing our sales tax to encompass more services as we move away from a manufacturing and goods economy into a more service-oriented economy, to perhaps, as Pritzker and other Democrats have talked about, moving from a flat income tax, which we have in this state, to a graduated or progressive income tax, where you pay a higher tax rate on additional tiers of income you earn. So, it's a good point, Kent, that this is, we're definitely not out of the woods.
And we always have to say, you know, it is about choices and we need, you know, we need to provide services more efficiently and, you know, we can't do everything. And that's a conversation that legislatures and governors don't usually like to have about, what is essential and how do we pay for it?
Earlier this week, we also saw some reports indicating that Governor Bruce Rauner was involved in a same-sex wedding with a friend of his, drawing some criticism from conservatives across the state. Brian, can you explain to us what happened here?
Yeah, we should clarify his involvement was officiating, apparently, at this wedding, not participating. But there was an Instagram post, apparently, and this is information from the Illinois Review, which is a conservative news website. There was an Instagram post of the governor appearing to officiate at the same-sex wedding ceremony of a person named Mark Cozy, who was he's a member of the board of Equality Illinois, which is a gay rights group in the state. This photo appeared on his Instagram account. The Illinois Family Institute, which is a conservative organization that opposes same-sex marriage, said that, the governor apparently, didn't learn anything from his near loss in the Republican primary and is just sort of continuing to provoke social conservatives with his actions. But, one thing this governor has been, he hasn't talked about it. In fact, he's downplayed it as much as he can, but he is a fairly socially liberal person when it comes to issues like abortion rights and apparently same-sex marriage.
And it's interesting, Brian, because Governor Rauner has campaigned on not having a social agenda, and yet, he signed on HB 40. And last year, he signed legislation on allowing transgender individuals to change their name on their birth certificates. So, we have those actions coming from the governor.
And it's probably fair and true that he doesn't have a social agenda. But the thing about being governor is that you do get things added to your agenda, whether you want them or not. And in fact, these are things that other people pushed on him, some just by happenstance, some strategically. There's some thought that the HB 40, when it was, when the idea that Roe versus Wade could be overturned by the U.S. Supreme Court was more theoretical than actual, as it's seeming to head in that direction, potentially, that was viewed as a political trick bag to put him in. But this is something where the governor may not have the agenda, but he does have positions and beliefs, and those beliefs have infuriated some members of the conservative Republican base.
And this certainly highlights the dilemma that the governor has in terms of his base. He barely won an election, a primary election, against a social conservative, Representative Jeannie Ives. We now have a third-party candidate running as a conservative, Sam McCann, who is going to make a feature of his campaign, his positions on social issues, on abortion, on gay marriage. So the governor has a dilemma in terms of Southern Illinois and socially conservative base, and also then appealing to socially moderate suburbanites, particularly suburban women, that were one of the things that accounted for his victory over Pat Quinn. And so anytime he does something that highlights social issues, it's going to be something that is going to be a point, to create tension in terms of his ability to solidify a conservative base that he'll need in terms of being competitive in the fall.
All right. Time now for our notes from the field. Kent?
Just a note for that the all of the quarterly campaign finance reports are now due. The deadline is Monday, and we will get a complete snapshot of exactly where we are with what is potentially in as of the 1st of July, where we are with what's potentially a $200 million gubernatorial race, and then how the money is lining up for what we expect will be, a half a dozen Senate races and a dozen House races that will be these $2 or $3 or $5 million targeted race, contests.
All right, that will do it for this week. Our panel included Kent Redfield, Brian Mackey, and Dave Dahl of WTAX Radio. You can get a podcast of this show at nprillinois.org or on the NPR One app. I'm Daisy Contreras.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.